Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. I would like to say I'm a perfectionist. I like things perfect. I just do. I have high expectations of myself and others. And I am self-critical as well. Isn't it good? But I also like to take a step back and see kind of the greater good. Like, you know, what's the net-net? Is the net-net a positive? Then we're good. And when the college football rankings came out last night, oh, that's bitch and complain.
Why don't we have 8? Why don't we have 16?
Why don't we have 32? We have 64. Set hike. Why don't we have everybody get in? It's participation or participation trophy country. Let's let everybody get in. Let me let you in on a little bit of my home life last night, okay? So I get home 4:15-ish. It's a good life. I'm not complaining about it. And my son takes tennis on Tuesdays, and I went and got a cup of coffee, and I had some other work to do. Like, I've been gone so much. I have expense reports to do. I also have AU basketball teams that I coach, and I got an NJB team that I coach, and I got other emails to send out and return, and other people's radio shows that I got to commit to, and I got my schedule to kind of line out. So I took some time, some Doug time, if you will, but it wasn't like I was sitting there getting a massage. And then I go and I pick up my kid, and he's in a great mood, and we geek out. I was listening to classic rock, which one of my daughters has gotten into, on the way home. We're banging our heads. We get home. We have like a family dinner, and then we decorate some of the Christmas tree. He and I play a couple of card games. And I was a little bit irritated in that my daughters, who didn't have anything else to do, hadn't finished their homework. And so we didn't complete the task of decorating the tree and decorating the whole house and really have a nice kind of family night where we have nothing else to do. I like, wait, you guys were home from 3:15 on and you decide to start your homework at 6:45? What were you doing for the last 3.5 hours? Well, my friend came over and I was doing this and I was doing that. So instead of having like the perfect family night, which no one in America has anymore, where you have dinner together, you do the tree, let's have a little dessert. Maybe we'll play a family game of cards. We'll do something kind of keeping the TV off. I had it on the background recording college basketball, NBA games, watching the Lakers just get smacked by the Denver Nuggets, watching Duke and Zion Williamson look like the number one pick that I told you on Twitter he was before the game actually started. All those things, instead of having the perfect family night, we still had to juggle with my wife. My wife's doing very well in 7th grade math with two different, she's doing great. She's getting an A. The girls are getting Bs, but she's getting an A. So instead of having the perfect, but then I caught my breath before I went to bed that night, and I was like, you know what? They were all in bed when they're supposed to be in bed. We got a roof over our heads. We did get a dinner together. We did kind of set up some of the tree. The net-net is that's about as good a night as you're going to get in 2018 when you have a wife, a husband, been married 18 years, daughters that are 12 years old, and a little boy that's 9 years old, and they all play a bunch of sports. Like, no one gets that. My net-net is, hey, I'm searching for perfect, but the reality is really good. That's the college football playoff. Would I like to have this perfect number of teams where only the teams that are capable of winning get in the play? Like, sure, if I could create a system that right now had Georgia in, had Ohio State in, had Oklahoma in, as well as the 3 undefeated teams, that'd be a great system. But every year changes and evolves. This year, the Pac-12 sucks. Okay. I live in the West Coast. My brother coaches at a Pac-12 team. My sister and brother are alums of a Pac-12 school. I live around all these SC idiots They can't decide what they want to do or who they're super mad at. So most times I really like the Pac-12. I don't blame the commissioner of the Pac-12 for the fact that the Pac-12 stinks. There's a myriad of other reasons. But the Pac-12 isn't deserving of having an argument. They can't like, well, we could, no, none of your teams are worthy here. And so you can't plan for the couple years ago when SC should have been in the playoff and Washington instead went and SC beats Penn State in the Rose Bowl. Look, the system we have, is it perfect? No. Nope. Not perfect. Matter of fact, the system we have has made bowl games relative, you know, with the exception maybe of the New Year's, I guess New Year's 6. There's bowl games and then there's the New Year's 6. Hey, it's New Year's 6. Let's pretend like they matter more because some of them kind of do and then they don't matter as much. But outside of the New Year's 6 and even some of the years, like a lot of these college football players aren't going to play in it. You know, they've seen past injuries, the Jalen Smith injury a couple years ago. They saw what happened Central Florida this past weekend, and they're like, if I got a chance to play in the league, I'm doing the Christian McCaffrey, I'm doing the Leonard Fournette, I ain't playing. Because we've made those other bowl games unimportant. And you might sit at home and think, well, these games have always been unimportant. Like, not really. 95% of those dudes, that's the last time they ever play in a real football game. Ever. Ever. Last time put on helmets, last time put on shoulder pads, last time they try and get each other hyped up like, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go. You know, football guy. Anybody who's ever played football guy knows you just kind of lose your mind for like 5 minutes there before the game starts smacking each other inside the head. The last time you'll ever do it. Bowl games are actually really cool. Half the teams end up with a win, and even the other half's like, you know what? We didn't win the game. We cost our conference some sort of conference sort of feel. But at least it's warm and it's better than it is when we're home. And we got a swag bag and we get to hang out with our boys for a week and hit somebody else one more time. Legally. But the system we have, like the bowl system before was not perfect but was really good. And they probably should have added a plus one, which is kind of what they did anyway, right? You got bowl games and then they just have one additional game. It's not really a playoff. It's a plus one. But the net is, during my lifetime, we've had several different times where we've had multiple national champions. The dumbest thing ever. You're a national champion and you're a national champion. We can play each other? Nope. Nope. Uh-uh. No, you are not. Not going to play another champ. And you may think, hey, the system still stinks because Central Florida finished undefeated last year and they should have played for it. But the reality is, none of us believe they could have beaten either. Any of those four teams, two consecutive weeks. Wouldn't have happened. Can you pluck off an Auburn when they don't care and you really do? Sure. Is it a great story what Central Florida's been able to do? Sure. But during my lifetime, we actually used to have split national champions every once in a while. Was it Georgia Tech and Colorado one year? And Nebraska and Michigan one year? Like, what? You end up a dumb. That's dumb. And so now we basically pick the four best teams, and we get about 4 out of 5 right, or 4 out of 6 right. But it's better to be more selective. Less is more. More is not more. It's better to be exclusive than overly inclusive. It's the opposite of life. Right? Better to be exclusive. Better make people feel like, you know what? I personally think Georgia is just as good, if not better, than Notre Dame, than Oklahoma, than Ohio State. And you know what? The truth is that if Georgia is as good as I think they are, they'll give Alabama a hell of a game this weekend, and they might still get in. And I won't be bothered by it. And if they don't, they'll sit there and go, hey, you know what we shouldn't have done? We shouldn't have turned the ball over, what, 5 times against LSU? And we'd still be playing. And you might sit there and go, well, that's an unfair. This is not about being fair. Try and find the four best teams. Might miss on a couple. But I've heard people on this network, on other networks, be like, man, how fired up would you be? How fired up would you be if you saw these games Alabama taking on Central Florida. Wouldn't be fired up at all. Sorry. Alabama be about a 25-point favorite against Central Florida. Right? Clemson taking on Michigan. I saw Michigan. They had a chance to beat Ohio State. And I believe Ohio State just scored again. Like, it's okay. You had a chance to play for national championship, and you lost. Now you don't. That's the way it works. It doesn't mean that... Does expanding mean that you would be like college basketball? Where, like last night, it was Duke, Indiana, and obviously Duke a lot better than Indiana. But we have gotten to the point where there's an oversaturation of college basketball, and unlike me, most people don't care about them. Most people don't record all of them, then stay up late in the night and watching them and breaking them down. But we have this desire to search for a perfect. We got to go perfect. I wanted to have a perfect night at home. We want to have a perfect college football playoff with the perfect number of teams. Perfect doesn't exist.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We were all concerned, but I was an ardent defender of the virtue of Andrew Luck. I was like, look, man, first 3 years, 33 wins. Took over an old roster that had holes and, you know, just thought having the greatest comeback in the history of the NFL, taking a team like that to the AFC Championship game was enough. But there were the naysayers, and whether he had, then he had some like internal organ damage, Andrew Luck did once, and then he had then obviously he had the shoulder problems. There were naysayers. They were haters, if you will. And now Andrew Luck is an MVP candidate. His Colts are an outside threat to making the playoffs after a really difficult start. And Anthony Costanzo, one of his offensive linemen who have kind of helped solidify this Colts team, joins us now on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Was there during the OTAs, he was saying like, look, I haven't even thrown the Duke yet. I haven't thrown it. They were taking along very slowly, and he was throwing like a high school ball and a smaller football. Were you guys sitting around there going like, man, I don't know. Like this doesn't, was there ever a concern that he might not make it back?
I don't think there was ever a concern of that. It was a matter of when, you know, like, so you know, just everyone's wanting to be asking him, hey, so are you throwing football yet? Or where are you at with that? So, yeah, I mean, it was just kind of like, hey, when are you going to be back? But, you know, he's always very honest and, you know, he would tell us, you know, hey, I'm going to be good. And then, kind of had to just take his word for it, and lo and behold, he was right.
When he came back and he was playing early in the season, you guys weren't throwing the ball downfield. What was that like when there were still, again, there were still naysayers even when he was playing and playing pretty well? What was it like?
Yeah, I mean, I was obviously hurt for a lot of the beginning of the season, but obviously I was still around and just kind of watching. And I mean, you could see that he had the command of the offense and. I'm not sure what the reason is for that. You know, if maybe it just didn't fall into our game plan against certain teams. But, I mean, I think, you know, even after his first preseason game, it's like, oh, okay, good. Andrew's back. You know, it was nice to see him out there whipping the ball around and having a lot of confidence over the offense and command of the whole team, really.
All right, I want to ask you about a decision your coach made. You know, he's a first-year coach, and I was critical of him. You're on your own. You guys were on your own 43-yard line. And you're playing the Texans. And at the time, I was like, man, I get the bravado of, hey, let's go for it. It's overtime. But a tie at that point in the season was good. And, oh, yeah, by the way, you guys gave new life to the Texans. In hindsight, was that a mistake to go for it?
No, I mean, I'm behind that decision 100%. I mean, you got confidence in your offense to make it. I think that's something that you got to do. I mean, that's just a gutsy play call, and it's just having confidence in the guys. And unfortunately, it didn't work out for us at the time. But you know, some of you kind of got to get over quickly and move on to the next one.
Anthony Costanzo, left tackle, Indianapolis Colts, 6-5 on the year, second with a bullet in the AFC South. Joins us, Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Do you get tired of Quentin getting all this love? Like, no one ever shows your blocks. Yeah, on Twitter. No one ever goes like, hey, Costanzo laid that guy out. Nothing. It's all, dude, Quentin Nelson is nasty. He's mean. He had disrespectful blocks. Do you get a little bit jealous of the fact that the Rook's getting all this love?
No, I'm not sure my game's quite as exciting as his. So it's rightfully due to him. I mean, I love seeing him play that way and get some notice. You know, net Andy for it. I mean, he deserves it. So it's fun to be playing next to a guy like that. He just really loves the game. So he's a great guy to play next to. And like I said, I mean, it's awesome that you don't really see linemen get accolades like that. To see people kind of recognizing him this early in his career is exciting.
Okay, so did whoever operates the Colts Twitter handle, did they pay his fine? Because he had there was the video of him just lowers it, he dump trucked a dude, and then yep. The league's like, oh well, he lowered his helmet, here's a maximum fine. That had to be an interesting conversation in the locker room.
We were definitely looking for that person when the fine came through. They were like, wait a second, this seems like maybe they were alerted to this by a huge media hoopla around it. So yeah, I mean, the thought definitely crossed their mind. That's just, I think he's still waiting on an appeal from that.
Okay, what do you think of Andrew Luck's receiving skills? You know, it's one thing to split a guy out wide than to throw the football to him. How did he grade out when you guys watched that film?
Hey, he caught the ball. He got us the first down. I prefer to not see him take those hits when he doesn't need to. But he's an athlete. You know, he's more than just a guy to go back there and throw the ball. He's an athlete, and now I think that if we do split him out again, teams have to respect the fact that we are willing to throw to him. So it's a good thing to have on film, and it kind of opens other things up in the offense.
Yeah, I mean, like, listen, when the Saints put Breeze out wide, you're like, they're not throwing it. There's no chance Taysom Hill's going to throw it to him. But now with Andrew Luck, you got to at least put somebody out there, right?
Exactly, yeah, that creates other holes in the defense that you can take advantage of.
Anthony Costanzo joining us from the Indianapolis Colts. They are winners of five consecutive games. I don't know. It's still losing to the Jets feels like the low, but when was the moment that it turned? When was the moment that you're like, we got a shot this year to do something?
You know what's crazy? There hasn't been like a moment because we have such a methodical kind of approach to every week. It's like it doesn't even feel like there was a turning point. It just kind of felt like we were going about our business the right way all season, and we just kind of knew that at some point we were going to start winning games. Because, I mean, even early, we're playing really well. It's just that, you know, games started just kind of slipping away from us at the end, or something would happen. And we're like, you know, if we continue on this course playing good football, that eventually games are going to start kind of falling our way. And that's what's been happening. You know, we've just kind of stuck to the process and stuck to taking one play at a time. It's really worked out for us.
Yeah, but I wonder if the Jacksonville game, considering it's a close game, because you know how it is, as much as you want to be like, it's process, and if we're good with the process, the result will follow. But when you find a way to lose close games like you did to New York, like you did to Houston, like you did to Philadelphia, there does, you know, look, maybe, whether it's in the stands or on the sidelines, there's this sense of inevitability. The Colts will screw this thing up, right? But something had to, was it, did something change in the Jacksonville game? Was there anything at all you can point to like, now we're finding a way to win games that in the past we would have lost?
I don't really know. I mean, no, I mean, it's literally just that, you know, I mean, it's such a one play at a time mindset here. I really can't even put my finger on what it is. I mean, it's just, I will say, I don't know when, you know, that feeling comes about or what creates it, but I will say, you know, in the fourth quarter of this past game, we were down 10. For some reason, you know, you just kind of have that idea in your mind, like, oh, we're going to win this game. And I remember having that feeling, you know, in like 2012, 2013, when we had a bunch of comebacks. It's just kind of that same feeling where it's like, as long as this game's close in the fourth quarter, we know that we can win it.
Anthony Costanzo joining us. I know you know this stat. I think other people, either they're going to be stunned when they hear it. Your unit, your offensive line, has only allowed one sack in the last six games. One sack. And the whole thing in the NFL is like, look, all these guys are good. You get a really good guy and you give him time, and they're gonna pick you apart. What is it about this offensive line, your unit, that has allowed you guys to gel so quickly and so cohesively?
Well, I mean, a lot of it has to do with kind of the way our offense is set up, and you know, Andrew also having amazing pocket awareness and getting rid of the ball. He makes our job a lot easier. But I mean, we just kind of know where each other's going to be at on the offensive line. We know what we need to do, and we know what is expected of us by the guy next to us. And I think just kind of that unspoken understanding of, you know, if a guy falls off late, where do we want him to fall off where we know we have our help? You know, what kind of pocket are we looking to create? It's really a game plan thing. You know, our coach, Coach Gooch, has done a great job of kind of getting us all on the same page with that, and we've been fortunate enough to have a bunch of the same guys playing next to each other as well.
You know what happens is quarterbacks, when they have great years, they always buy their offensive linemen something, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, have you put in the request yet? Like, what is – because – and usually they get you guys, like, offensive linemen stuff, right? Like, yeah I'm going to get you guys, like, an ATV. You're like, well, then what if I don't hunt and I don't want an ATV?
Exactly.
But, right? So, for you personally, what do you want?
You know, I was talking to Andrew about it the other day. He's like, hey, what kind of stuff are you guys looking for? I'm like, dude, just whatever you give us, we'll be happy with it. Just – no, like, weird gifts. Like, I don't need, like, a scarf or, you know, or something like that. Like, some weird gift. Just something that I can have fun with. That's what I told.
Your parents owned an Italian restaurant when you were a kid, right?
That is correct.
What was your favorite dish?
I was a big chicken franchise fan. I used to crash some chicken. So they put two chicken cutlets with the franchise sauce over it. It was almost, I think it might have been, like, almost a pound of pasta, and I was just... I'd go to town on that.
It's weird how that used to be, like, that used to be everybody's jam when we were in high school, right? Carb load. And now all of a sudden, now carbs are bad. You're like, wait, when did carbs get bad? You still carbo load night before a game?
Oh, yeah, we're on a very high carbo load diet here, which when our nutritionist told us, you know, you guys got to get as many carbs as you can. Growing up eating pasta, like, every night of my life, I was like, that I can do. So I've definitely been ascribing to the high carb diet, and it's been great. It's been giving me lots of energy, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I just grew up on it.
I heard your parents, they never missed a game. Is that true? They've never missed a game?
They never missed one in college. There've been a couple due to inclement weather, you know, different things that have happened in the pros. But I would say I think I've played like something like 120 games. They've definitely been to probably over 110 of them.
Listen, I appreciate you joining us. And obviously, it's awesome stuff that you guys have seen such success with your unit. And thanks for joining us on Fox Sports Radio.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
All right. It's Anthony Costanzo, part of the offensive line for the Indianapolis Colts.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
The NFL is not racist. Okay? The NFL is not racist. All right, a couple different things. One, you have an African-American athlete who's alleged to have beaten a woman who gets picked up on waivers, right? Like, it's if you can play or they think you can't play if they have any sort of value for me. Here's another one. Ravens cornerback Jimmy Smith told Robert Klemko of Sports Illustrated, any black quarterback, especially with that type of speed, you get labeled that he can't throw, but he can throw. We have gone to the point now where black players don't even know what the stereotype used to be. It was an incorrect stereotype. But the stereotype used to be about the black quarterback. No one has ever said the black quarterback couldn't throw. What the racial stereotype used to be about quarterbacks that were black was they couldn't handle an NFL playbook. Remember, this is going back, and Warren Moon, of course, we can have him on. Warren Moon threw about as pretty a football as possible. But the stereotype was in the 60s and 70s and early 80s, it was that a black quarterback couldn't handle an NFL playbook. That's it. That was the stereotype. Right? And of course, Doug Williams, who we were just talking about with the Redskins. He was famously the first black quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl, and he was famously asked the question, how long have you been a black quarterback? But it was by a foreign journalist, and it was kind of lost in translation or whatever. No one ever said, ever said that Lamar Jackson couldn't throw a football. There's YouTube video of him throwing it 80 yards in high school. What they did say was, Lamar Jackson couldn't always throw it to the guy he wanted to throw it to. That was the problem. That he was little, that he was non-communicative, that he was either not particularly bright or took the advice of his mom and didn't have an agent. Here's what actually happened. Okay? Actually happened. His mom represented him. And when teams wanted to work him out, they couldn't get a hold of him because they couldn't get a hold of her. And that's not the way it works. Like, there's certain agents that represent all the quarterbacks. Why? Because they know how all this stuff works. I told people this before. Like, look, I give 10% of my check to a guy who I think is a great agent. I had two really good agents. They've been doing it for a long time. Now, do I like giving up 10% of my check? Hell no, I don't. But you know what? This is what they do for a living. And they've done it for a long time. And I would prefer the safety net of being put in the best possible position to succeed. He didn't, and it was a disaster. Additionally, when he went for the whiteboard, he was way behind in terms of his football knowledge. And he's just not a super communicative guy. He's just, that's not his personality. And that's also not the personality, and that's also opposite of most quarterbacks' personalities. Has nothing to do with if they're white or black. It just has to do with the position. Like, oh, well, like, you're being critical of his personality because he's black. No, Jay Cutler's personality rubbed everybody the wrong way. Right? Johnny Manziel's arm strength got criticized. So did his off-the-field baggage. Tim Tebow was not a smart quarterback. He wasn't. He couldn't throw. Why? Because that's how he played. But the worst part is that Jimmy Smith, who plays in the NFL, doesn't even know what the old stereotype was, which was wrong, about black quarterbacks. You know, he's a black quarterback, he's out of speed, he can't throw. Nobody ever said that Mike Vick couldn't throw. Mike Vick couldn't throw short and intermediate routes. Mike Vick couldn't read a defense because Mike Vick, by his own account, didn't work at it. Because what happens is we fast-track these guys through. Fast-track them through. They're so ridiculously athletic and explosive at the position, and they can throw that, did they read the play right? Doesn't matter. They just do it. They just make plays. Brett Favre was considered dumb. Terry Bradshaw was considered dumb. So were there previous racial stereotypes about black quarterbacks not being able to read a defense, not being able to understand the position? Yes. Okay? But we've evolved past that. Evolved past. If you can play quarterback, they will have you play quarterback in the NFL. Whether you're white or you're black, you're mixed race, you're Hispanic, you're Hawaiian like Tua is, or Marcus Mariota is, they don't care. We won't win football games. What they said about Lamar Jackson, and I talked to a team who said, hey, we did evaluate him as a wide receiver because we don't think long-term he can play quarterback. Because they'll figure out what you're doing, and he is not communicative, and he's not somebody who's going to be good in the pocket. He's little. And though he's fast, he's inaccurate. And he was, a below 60% completion guy at Louisville playing for a really good offensive-minded head coach. Now, he was a freak athlete. He made plays, and he'll still make some plays. You're like, wow. But as I said yesterday, tell me the athletic quarterback that's been outside the pocket that's worked. Even Steve Young. Doesn't last long-term. Ty Montgomery said this to Sports Illustrated. It's kind of hard to listen to TV when they question his ability to throw a ball because he can throw a ball. No one's ever said he can't throw a ball. Zero. There is not a single human being that's like, he can't throw a football. No. It was, can he throw a football accurately? Josh Allen. Is Josh Allen white? He's white, correct? And what do they say about Josh Allen? Josh Allen can throw it 100 miles. Into the driving rain, into the wind. But dude, Josh Allen, he can't throw it to the right team. He misfires. We don't evaluate, no one has in the last 20 years has evaluated a player's ability to throw a football based upon the color of their skin. Is he athletic? Yeah, he's freaky athletic. But he's little. Non-communicative, and in terms of throwing a football, the only thing that has ever been in question is, can you throw it to the right person? That is actually a prerequisite for playing football in the National Football League. Brady Quinn, who we have on here. Why did Brady Quinn last in the National Football League? because he was inaccurate. He was inaccurate. And Brady will tell you one thing. I know somebody who coached him in the NFL is like, look, man, I think he was just too, like Brady, have you ever seen Brady Quinn with his shirt off? Like that dude is, I think he's actually done modeling. He's just too yoked up. People thought he was inflexible, not as a human being, as an athlete. He may be inflexible as a human being too. I don't know. But we got to stop with this nonsense about it. This reminds me, of people who criticize others. They shame people for Halloween costumes that they call blackface. Like, look, I don't think there's a real win in getting dressed up as a black person or whatever. But if you want to get dressed up and as LeBron James, like, that's not blackface. Blackface is highly offensive. Highly. Highly offensive. But blackface is, again, it was playing up negative stereotypes about black people back in the 1920s. But what happens is, over the years, people don't know what actual blackface is. So if you get dressed up as a black person, like, you're doing blackface. Like, no, I'm actually just getting dressed up as Janet Jackson, or I don't even know what the win is in it, but people aren't even smart enough to know what it is or to do a little bit of research. So to Jimmy Smith and to Ty Montgomery is a smarter dude than that. Jimmy Smith, I just think you get so defensive about Lamar Jackson. No one has ever said he can't throw. It's, can he throw accurately? Can he run a huddle? Can he read a defense? Can he communicate to the offense what they're running and what they want to switch into?
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Greg Cosell from the NFL Films joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Greg, let's start with the Dallas Cowboys.
Okay.
Jerry Jones waxed poetic about Amari Cooper's route running skills.
They're good.
So the questions haven't been about his route running, though, right? It's been about his hands. He had some drops in Oakland, and about his explosiveness. Is that accurate?
Well, he's a very good route runner, and I think he's explosive enough given his size. He's a good player. He's a good addition to that team. But, you know, to me, Doug, it kind of raises the question of where we are in the NFL right now. The Cowboys are an old-school offense. It's a run-game foundation. It's an execution run game. There's not a lot of misdirection. There's not a lot of deception. It's a pretty basic pass game that, by NFL standards, is somewhat remedial and elementary. So can that kind of team be a true Super Bowl contender? That to me, is sort of the question about the Cowboys.
And let's just, before we get to Super Bowl contender, can they keep up with the Saints? Because my perspective is, like, look, the way to beat the Saints is you got to keep Drew Brees off the field. The way to keep Drew Brees off the field is going to have to be to long drives, but you got to run the football. They're actually really good against the run. The weakness of that defense is against the pass. Do the Cowboys have what it takes to beat the Saints?
Well, the other part to that is the defensive part. Their defense is very, very good. Because when people talk about keeping Drew Brees off the field, that's true, but there's a misnomer to that. So let's say that in a normal game he gets 11 or 12 possessions. So if you hold him to 9 possessions, Doug, think about this. If you hold him to 9 but you give up 4 touchdowns, that means you've got to score more than 28 points. So the issue is not just keeping him off the field. The issue is your defense has to play really, really well in addition. Now, the Cowboys are built that way. It's run game and defense. That's the foundation. By design, they limit the impact of the quarterback, but Prescott can beat you with his legs at times, but they're really not asking him to be the guy that drives that offense.
Okay, so let's go back. Do you believe that the way in which their offense is designed and how well they're playing is good enough to keep up with the Saints, who they're going to score because they score on everybody?
Well, then your defense has to be really, really good. Because when you say the Saints score on everybody, up to this point they have. When you go back to some really good defenses, and I'm not certainly comparing them to these defenses, I'm just saying that we've seen examples in recent memory where defenses were so good that they could hold teams down, like the Legion of Boom. So the question is the Cowboy defense that kind of defense where they could beat a Saints team 23-20? their defense has to be that way in order for them to get to where they might want to go.
Greg Cosell joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. The Cleveland Browns have won two in a row. They're puffing out their chest, but they've beaten two of the worst teams in the NFL. Bengals, historically bad defensively, right? Like, they're going to go down potentially as the worst defense in the history of the sport. So are the Browns and their play calling that much better, or is the level of competition?
Well, I think what you have to look at, particularly if you're a Browns fan, is the way they're doing it. Because all you're trying to get now is wins if you're a Browns fan. And the way they're playing offense, I think, speaks to where they're going, because they're playing to Baker Mayfield's strengths. Because Baker Mayfield is a rhythm player. He's a twitchy kid. He's very quick with his drop, with his set, his delivery. They're playing a rhythm game. He's a rhythm timing player. And he does have the ability at times to get outside the pocket. But they're designing an offense and a pass game approach, Doug, that plays to his strengths so the ball can come out. That's what you have to be excited about. No one's looking at them right now as a playoff or Super Bowl contender. They're just trying to be efficient on offense, and they've also got a good running back that now adds to that.
All right, what about the Baltimore Ravens? They've had new life with Lamar Jackson, but also against equally putrid defenses. Give me your sense of the sustainability of the style with Lamar Jackson.
Well, I think ultimately he'll have to throw it better, and there'll have to be more of a pass game element to it that becomes a little more expansive. Right now, they're a tough offense, though, to game plan for it because of Jackson's running ability. This week, the Raiders, they played a lot of two high safeties, and you can't really play that way when you have a running quarterback, because you lose the numbers count to defend the run game. And they had a lot of success, the Ravens did, against the Raiders because of that. So I don't know if it's overly sustainable, but the quarterback as a runner can be part of your offense if you can throw it well.
Yeah, no question about it. Greg Cosell joining us, Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. The Chargers have not been up to snuff against the elite teams in the NFL, right? They lost to the Broncos, the game which they gave away. Outside of that, only other two losses against the two good teams they played, Rams and Chiefs. Now they go and take on the Steelers,
right,
who just gave away their own game to the Broncos. They probably don't have Melvin Gordon this week. What's your level of faith without Gordon? They do have Eckler and Justin Jackson, the rookie,
right,
that the Chargers can go in and win on the road in Pittsburgh.
You know, again, I've always loved Phillip Rivers. I think he's a terrific quarterback. I think their defense has to be a big factor as they go forward. I think they have some good players, but I think that ultimately they need to be a complete team, because I think that they can score with their wide receivers who are big. This is a very interesting matchup for them, because the Steeler defense, for the most part, has played well over the last month or so as they've sort of evolved into playing more man coverage, blitzing a little more. They now blitz more than any team in the NFL, so they've sort of gone back to the old Blitzburg days, attacking, and I think they'll do that because Rivers is essentially a pocket quarterback,
yep,
and the O-line for the Chargers has had some issues in pass protection, so I think you'll see an aggressive Steelers defense that could cause some problems.
The Eagles fell behind 19-3. Had a big drive,
yeah,
big drive before the end of the half, though, and they went for two and got it. Where are they in terms of being where they need to be? It feels like that you made a trade to go get a talented wide receiver and Golden Tate, and they haven't found a way to really allow him to be effective. Or I don't know if it's him. When you watch the Eagles' offense, what do you see on tape?
Well, you know, it's funny, I watched that game on television. I heard Chris Spielman say something that's absolutely true, and I think a lot of people are surprised by this because the Eagles are defending champions. But he said that the Eagles, their best vertical weapon is Zach Ertz, and when your tight end's your best vertical weapon, you've got some problems. And that's the issue. The Eagles don't have a lot of talent on offense, Doug. They don't have any vertical weapon, so they're lacking dimensions. And this week they ran the football, which they're going to have to do. Adams had 22 carries, Josh Adams. Now he gained 84 yards, not a big number, but they were able to stay with the run game, and it was effective at points throughout the game. They just don't have enough in the receiving department to really be a big-time threat, so they're going to have to be balanced.
Greg Cosell joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. I know you watched that. You just said you watched that game. Odell Beckham Jr. was critical of the play calling. Number of plays, I felt like, limited them. They actually,
without question,
they also ran the ball really well in the first half and didn't have number of plays to get the ball to Saquon Barkley. When you watched, what was your thoughts on the play calling?
Well, first of all, they only ran 21 plays in the second half. Five of the first 11 plays, Barkley touched the ball. So it's not a case where they didn't give the ball to Barkley. They got caught behind the sticks a lot. They didn't have the ball. And then the game sort of started to get away from them, and they felt that they had a score. You know, keep one thing in mind. Barkley had a long touchdown run and a 26-yard run. Every other run gained 4 yards or less.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's kind of his thing, though. Even if you go back to Penn State, that was his thing, right?
It was his thing.
He was a home run hitter.
Yeah, that's a great point. It changed a bit the week prior against the Bucks, where he really stuck it in there and gained and had, you know, 7, 8, 9 yard runs. But that's been his MO back at Penn State. It's been his MO through the first part of the NFL season. So the tape doesn't say that they didn't give the ball to Barkley, but you got to keep one thing in mind. If you're not going to run that many plays, you can't have it both ways. You can't say you have to give it to Barkley and feed him, and then in the next sentence say, well, you should be throwing the ball so you can throw it to Odell Beckham. You know, it works. They didn't run enough plays in the second half.
Yeah. It does all have to work together. All right, you have play calling with Mike McCarthy, you got quarterback play with Aaron Rodgers, and then you get to wide receivers outside of Devontae Adams' ability to get open. Who's most to blame for their offensive inadequacies?
Well, I'll answer it this way. The way they run their pass game, and I'm sure this is what a lot of people point to, is they tend to run a lot of individual routes. So therefore, they're asking their wide receivers to win one-on-one. They've been doing that for a number of years. When you have great receivers, that can be really effective because they win and you get completions. If you don't have the receiving talent that you'd ultimately like to have, oftentimes they don't get open early enough in the down, and Rodgers won't turn it loose. Rodgers is a very interesting quarterback to evaluate because he can obviously do some phenomenal things outside of structure, and he's certainly a ridiculously gifted thrower, but there's also times he doesn't throw the ball to open receivers within the structure. So it's kind of a mix of where you go with this, but their offense is very, very inconsistent.
Yeah, it's consistently inconsistent.
Correct.
Okay, give me your sense, again, after watching on tape, of the Vikings. There have been people that have been critical of Kirk Cousins, and the Vikings came in wanting to run the football. They didn't run it a ton, but they were effective enough. What's your thoughts on the Vikings at this point in time?
Well, I think people are very critical of Kirk Cousins because of the money.
Right.
I think that people in the league know what he is, and Cousins is a rhythm passer. The Vikings, at his best, they don't ask him to do too much. You know, they want the three-step game, the five-step game, ball come out. Now, he can be very aggressive, and that's a positive in his game, that he can be an aggressive thrower who will turn it loose. He does have a sense of anticipation. But overall, Kirk Cousins is not, from a talent standpoint, a high, high-level quarterback. But people see him that way now because they gave him a lot of money. But that's irrelevant to a coach.
Right.
So, to me, they need to run the ball more and better. Going into the game against the Packers, they had the third fewest rushing attempts in the league, and Cousins was dropping back an awful lot of times. To me, too many times. So they need to find a run game. Supposedly, Dalvin Cook is healthy. They tried to run it a little bit against the Packers. They were not very successful.
Deshaun Watson, that's sustainable. He's still running a lot, and he's not sliding. He's been hurt twice. Like, I like him. And I like some of the weapons. And, like, look, Lamar Miller had an outstanding game as well. But I'm just, when I watch it, again, he's a better thrower than Lamar Jackson. He's more developed than Lamar Jackson. But I still have some of the same fears when I watch him. Am I crazy?
No, he's going to have to be careful. But if you've noticed one thing, in the last 4 or 5 weeks, he has not thrown more than, I believe, 25 balls in any game, because what they've done is they've run the ball more, they've not asked him to drop back as much, and it's been effective. People probably are not aware that Lamar Miller is probably on pace to rush for 1,300 yards, and if he can do that, that's pretty good. Because at this point, they have a below-average offensive line.
Yep.
We know that. And very often, that's why Watson moves. But really good quarterbacks, and he's not there yet. He's not refined enough. But really good quarterbacks can help an offensive line that's not real good. Watson is still developing as a refined pocket quarterback. He's not at the point, Doug, where he can help camouflage and compensate for O-line issues. So they need to not have him drop back as much, which is what they've been doing.
Great stuff, as always. Greg Cosell, NFL Films. We really appreciate you joining us, Greg.
Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it.